Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I hate to do this, but I think it's that important. There was an article recently that was about a young woman, a former New York Times reporter, Bari Weiss. I believe that's I'm saying her name correctly. And she was on with CNN's Brian Stelter. And her answer to a question from Brian Stelter, I think, really sums up a lot of what we need to clear up culturally, one way or another, in our country. We've said this many, many times here. I've said it, is that the life we're at is not sustainable the way things are right now. A lot of us feel like the world, the country is falling apart. We see the rest of the world doing things that Chinese with a hypersonic missile that can go around the world with a nuclear bomb and then strike somewhere. And we're over here arguing about nonsense. It's just, it's shocking. So we're going to cover some things. Let's take a little spin around the news cycle. Now, first we lost General Colin Powell. Now, he's 84-year-old, gentlemen. When he was the Secretary of State, I thought he did a good job, but I got to tell you, that was in a previous time. That was in a previous world when I thought that the Bushes, George Herbert Walker and George Walker Bush, I thought they were really good presidents. I thought they were good, decent people, and I guess they still are. I guess I can't say that I don't think that they're not good and decent people. What has changed is the view I have of them after the Trump era. The way, especially President Bush the younger, behaved and still behaves to this day, being best friends with the Obamas and loving the rhinos and ignoring Trump, hating Trump, going after Trump. It's decidedly changed the way I see the Bushes and other rhinos in the Republican Party. The weakness, you know, the great Rush Limbaugh used to talk all the time about the weakness of the Republican Party. And you could see it if you actually opened your eyes and looked. You could see the weakness of the Republican Party. They never take a fight to the end. They always blink when they shouldn't. They always worry about media coverage when they shouldn't. And they always abandon us, the people, after making promises to us. And that's unfortunate, because how many times did we see during the Bush era that if we just had the presidency, we could straighten some things out in the country that people, conservative people, believed needed to be straightened out? The border, voting rights, the move towards protecting the unborn, all those kind of things. And if we only had the presidency, and then we got the presidency, and we got nothing. And then, well, if we had the presidency and the House, and then we got the House, and we got nothing. If we had the presidency and the House and the Senate, we could do everything. And then we did nothing. You know, the 63 votes, I believe there were 63 votes, and I'm quoting that off of another great radio person, Sean Hannity, where he says there were 63 votes to get rid of Obamacare when the Republicans were out of power, when they had no ability to do anything. And then when they did have an ability to do everything, they had the House, the Senate, and the President, they just couldn't come up with enough votes to make it happen. Well, how does that happen? That happens on purpose. That happens on purpose, because you can certainly be brave when it's all talk. When it requires real action, being brave is a lot harder. You know, it's a lot like, and I don't mean to conflate these two issues, but I think it's important. We hear so much now about the coming revolution. Will it be a hot revolution where we're fighting each other, or will it be a cold revolution where we make a stand and we run things out through the courts or whatever? Well, when we talk about the hot revolution, which more and more people are openly talking about, you know, if it comes to it, I'm going to fight. If it comes to it, I've got my guns. You know, I hear all these people saying. And when you call them out, you see a change in the way they respond. And this is normal. I'm not putting them down. I'm simply saying this is a reality, because you're talking about real, regular people, probably a lot of you out there, right? Because I know here people I know that I trust and respect. You know, I would do whatever it takes to preserve my nation for my grandchildren and my children. I would fight to the death. I would be the first one to stand up. And I said, would you really? Are you really going to go to war? You're really going to get a gun and you're going to fight people when they do what? What's the Sumter, Fort Sumter moment when you're going to decide you're going to go hot, you're going to shoot, you're willing to shoot your way out of this problem and fight for democracy and freedom and liberty? And to a person, and I got to tell you, it's probably 15 or 20 people that I've asked this outright to. And I'll ask everybody out there, because if some of you are saying that, I would fight to the death for the, you know, would you really? And when is your moment? How do you know? Is that when everyone else starts shooting, then you'll jump in? Or are you going to be the first one to give up your job, potentially your freedom? Because, you know, now, if you go to a school board meeting and you yell a little too loud about some crazy thing the school board is teaching your children, you could get locked up and go to jail. So could you imagine defending freedom in a real strong way? You're going to take a weapon and do something? Imagine what would happen to you. I don't think they would call them gulags or re-education camps. They would come up with some new name for this modern future of, you know, all understanding and this and that. So what are you really willing to do? Well, I think when it comes down to it, most people are going to do nothing. We are going to be the frogs in the bucket of water, and the water's getting hotter and hotter till it's going to come to a boil, and we're not going to be able to get out of it. Now, that sounds pessimistic, and I guess to a point it is. But I ask this in reality, who's actually going to do it? Because first of all, what do you do in secret? You meet in secret, and what do you have, secret meetings? Do you have generals? I mean, how do we create the new Minutemen, right? How do we create the new militia? What are we going to do? You're going to join an existing militia that's already under investigation and, quite frankly, has a lot of crazy people in it? Is that what we do? Or do we all just kind of keep our powder dry, so to speak, and we all wait till that Fort Sumter moment, and then we're going to react? I don't know. And this is some conversation that has come up how many, many, many times. And I find it interesting because I have my own feelings about it. I feel in my heart that just as our forefathers said, you know, you have to rise up and throw off a tyrannical government. They weren't saying, well, you know, if the government lets you, you should do that. No, they were saying if it gets like that, you should be like us and throw off a tyrannical government that threatens your rights and your freedoms. And I think we all agree. We would do that. But when? When am I going to go make a stand on Capitol Hill and declare that we are now going to fight back? You'd be gone in 2 seconds. You'd be imprisoned in 2 seconds. Who's going to go do it? Somebody going to give up their jobs? Somebody going to give up their livelihood? Hey, family, I love you all very much, but I have to protect the rights of my grandchildren and my children, and I'm now going to be a freedom fighter here in America. Is that what we're going to do? See, it's a lot more difficult when you take it out of the abstract, emotional, I would do it, to, will I actually do it? And I don't know. I think clearly there is a moment that the tide would turn. And I can only imagine that would be a real form of violence by the government against a group of people that everyone believed was doing the right thing. You know, dragging a guy off from a school board meeting trying to report that his daughter was sexually assaulted and the school board did nothing about it, and everybody just kind of stood beside and watched and, you know, didn't really say anything. And then this guy, you know, the head prosecutor, who's a Soros-backed prosecutor, comes and personally prosecutes the case and wants the man to go to prison, to actually go to jail, to a jail cell. And nobody really does anything. Right? Who's going to do anything else? The other day, on the Philadelphia transit system, in the middle of the day, there was a car full of people going to work or coming home or going whatever the heck they're going to do. And a young girl was sexually assaulted in front of everyone, and nobody did anything to help her. Nobody did anything. So who are we saying we're going to fight back against? Who and where? So this is where I feel a little pessimistic about this. And this is where we need our representatives to grow a sit, to be powerful, to be strong. Look at our Democratic friends. Look at our friends on the left. You could say a lot of things about them, that they're naive about reality, that they are pie in the sky, that they have a lust for power. They clearly have a lust for power, not just to be in power, to have a great life for themselves, but they want to control you and what you do. They want to tell you everything about your life, what you can and can't do, down to the smallest thing. That is a lust for power that is just unrivaled by any other group other than our friends on the left, which is clear. You can't deny it. You see it every single day. But do you see how they behave? How do they behave? Are they shrinking violets for the things that they believe? They have a 50-50 Senate, and the only power they have is that they have the vote of the vice president that can break a tie. And they got 5 or 6 extra seats in the House, and they are acting like it's 99 senators to one, and that they got 500 and something congressmen to nobody. They're doing, and everybody in the country voted for them, 98%. This is where we're going. And they are just boldly going forward. They don't care what the polls say. They don't care what anybody says. They are just doing it. And if you catch them doing something wrong, do they apologize? Do they bend over backwards to apologize and give up everybody in their party and talk about how hard, oh, they'll never do it again? No, they lie. The party surrounds them. The news media surrounds them and creates a different narrative. They are boldly going for what they want. So I said this to somebody the other day. I made this comparison. I said, Republicans don't do that. The minute it looks like it's turning, they give everybody else up, right? They're like in a criminal interview, and you're the first one to go. What are you going to do? All right, I'll tell on everybody. That's what they do. They bend over right away. And they said, well, even though the Republicans do that, that's because they stand for doing what's right. They want to do the right. They wouldn't want to use power inappropriately. They wouldn't want to do something with that small of a majority that would change the entire country. It wouldn't be right. When you think about it, you're saying it's not right for the left to do it. Why would it be right for the right to do it? You know, and that's a pretty good argument. But that argument falls in the realm of decency, honesty, and trustworthiness. See, and that is where many on the right, conservatives, Republicans, and lots of independents, that's where people come down. They believe in doing the right thing. They believe in doing the right thing to their own detriment. Now, I'm not suggesting that the right behave like the left. At least I don't think I'm saying that. What I'm simply saying is, can't we learn anything from our friends on the left? The way they govern, the way they stick together, the way they keep a message, the way they look out for each other. They steamroll what they want. Right now, do you think that with Joe Biden's approval ratings, I think at 28% on governing, 34% on how he's handling the border, 36% on how he's handling the economy, with low numbers like that, do you think that they're sitting in the White House and in all the congressional districts and everywhere going, oh man, we had better change course, we had better fix it? No, do you think they're really doing that? I don't think they're doing that. I think they could care less what the polls say. They're going to do what they're going to do. You people out there be damned. You voted for this. You asked for this. And now you're getting it. And the media is not playing its role, its constitutional role, to be the wall, to ask questions, to hold truth to power, or whatever that saying is. They don't do that. For the majority of the media is simply a lapdog for our friends on the left. They're all socialists, they're all future communists, and they toe the line. When somebody steps out of line on the left, they destroy them. They absolutely destroy them, and they get rid of them. Well, they do that to anybody on the right that they can too, but the right has learned, if we just beg forgiveness, say we're wrong, and step aside, maybe they won't ruin our life, right? So we've learned very well how to behave. Boy, did I come a long way around the horn, didn't I, to talking about Colin Powell passing away from COVID complications and my feelings about the Bush politicians, right? George Bush the senior, I read a book about him after he was president. And when I got done with the book, I was so impressed with him and his family. I really was. I mean, Him and his wife Barbara are good and decent people, no doubt about it. And when I get done, I said he is the most qualified guy to be president. All the things he did in his life, his experiences, and then he was a good president, but he got weak, and the media jumped up on him, and he wasn't up for the fight, and we lost. And that was the beginning of the trend that we're in now. Is that we are we're drifting really hard to the left, and it's going to be hard to come back from all of this. Because we have mostly Bush wing kind of politicians in the Republican Party that are very, very weak. They're not going to stand up and fight. They're not going to take a chance with their seat. They're not going to take a chance anywhere. What I have been seeing, though, which is interesting, I don't know if you've seen any of these young Republicans that are running for congressional office. They want to primary some of these senior Republicans, and they're calling them rhinos, and they're saying it's time to get rid of them and to have a real conservative party. And I think that's probably a good thing. That's what should happen. You know, we the people know what we want our politicians to do, whether we're on the right or on the left. And if they don't do it, and we are stupid enough to keep voting for the same people over and over again, that's the definition of crazy, right? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. So when they told us if we had the presidency, if we had the Congress, if we had the Senate, and they still did nothing, and we went back the next election cycle and we voted for all of them again, shame on us. Shame on us. Right? The politicians, I believe on both sides, on the right and on the left, there are people, good and decent people, who want to do what they believe is right. I believe that. I don't necessarily agree with their beliefs, but I think they are genuine and they want to do the right thing, with what they see is the best thing. And they go out there and fight. The rest of them, I honestly believe, they got a pretty good gig. They got a pretty good gig. They go to Congress. They make $180,000 to $200,000 a year. That's a pretty good salary. You can live on that. I do have to say it's difficult having two places to live. You know, you got this place in Washington and a place in your home state. For $200,000, that's kind of a stretch. I get it. But the fact that most of them leave their service in Congress as millionaires, when their only job, the only job they get paid for, is working in Congress for that $200,000, and we all sit around like idiots and go, well, our guy's great, our girl's excellent, let's vote for them again. And then they leave in 20 years and they got $30 million, $40 million. How'd they get $40 million? Doing their job. How'd they do that? That's why people don't leave. That's why they bend over. That's why they make, I don't want to get in trouble, I just want to keep this very cool job. This great existence I got, right? Our system is sick. Our system has been poisoned. And it is to all of our detriment. So thank you for letting me voice that. Recently there was a post on Twitter from America Out Loud, the station. And they said, hey, we have lots of different kind of hosts here. We have people who are outraged and people who are funny. And I was wondering, is the great Malcolm Out Loud, is he talking about me and my pages of outrages? Or any of the other hosts here who really are fed up with what we see happening to our country and to our people, all of our people, right, left, every race. We're all Americans here. And we all see that this isn't right. There's a general feeling now this isn't right. And I needed to vent some of that out of me today. So I want to thank you. Let me say what I want to say about Colin Powell. Like I said, Colin Powell, I thought he was a great leader. I thought he was a great example as an American of how to be a leader. And when the Gulf War was starting and he came out, you could see he was a little uneasy with the facts that he had to present. But he presented them in the best possible case to make a case to go against Iraq, right? To get Iraq out of where, I can't remember where the hell they were now, to get them out of there. And his credibility lent to the story, and we voted to go and get him out of Kuwait. I'm sorry, he was in Kuwait. We were in Kuwait. We had to go to Kuwait and get them out of there. Now, if you'll remember, we got them out in record time. General Schwarzkopf, 100-hour war, crossed the desert, had the entire Iraqi elite guard who would kick America's ass. Remember that? Oh, we were going to get destroyed. Got them out of there in 100 hours, and they had all those soldiers, the Iraqi soldiers, with their equipment leaving, and it was the highway of death, I think they called it. They bombed it mercilessly. to destroy the enemy, and then whatever was left of it, especially the Republican Guard, Hussein's Republican Guard, took back off to Baghdad, and the question came up, should we destroy them completely, or should we stop? Because the mandate was to get them out, and we got them out. But at that moment in time, there was an understanding that when you're fighting an evil, if you don't do the entire job that needs to be done to disable the evil completely, it will come back. It's like cancer. Evil in our world is like cancer. And it will come back if you don't get it all. You don't just go in and get a little bit of the tumor. You go in and try and get all of it. Well, in this case, there was a push and a feeling that if George Bush, the president, had said, yes, chase them back to Baghdad and eradicate them, that would have been the end of the Iraqi threat in the area, and we could have done whatever we could do to then pacify the area and make sure that a legitimate government got set up, and then we could get out of there. But instead, we did the right thing. President Bush said, hey, my mandate was to get him out of Kuwait. He suffered a serious blow on the highway of death, and now they're headed back to Baghdad. We will not chase them any further. Now, we can always look back on decisions, whether it's a national decision like that one, did the president do the right thing, or a personal decision. Sometimes we have personal decisions that we make. And what's that saying that says, we are all really just one or two decisions away from a completely different life? You know, there are things that come up in our lives that we have to make a choice about, and it could go either way, and we make certain choices. And if we made different choices, it could have changed our life completely. Where you went to school, if you went to school, the kind of job you took. Once you're raising a family, do you pick up your family and move to where job opportunity is, or do you stay and try and hack it out? Do you save your failing marriage, or do you move on? All of these kind of things, we're one or two decisions away from changing our futures complete, and it affects usually everyone around us. Well, the same thing like a national decision. That national decision we left to the president. And I remember everybody that I was told, oh, we should have got him, we should have got him, because we know how bad he was. But the president made a decision to do the right thing, and we took the leadership from him that he was telling us, hey, my mandate said to get him out of Kuwait, and I did. And it wouldn't be right to go any further. Now, I might have, there's a little of course, there's ancillaries to all of that, but that was the bottom line. He did what he set out to do, got him out, and then that was it. We're done. If we had gone all the way to Baghdad and wiped out the entire Iraqi army and Saddam Hussein and his party and all those evil who were there, wiped them all out, how would it went? Would it have went any different than the way it went now? Well, we know he went after the Kurds when we let him go. We had to set up a no-fly zone to protect the Kurds because he wasn't done fighting. His ego was bruised. He just got thrown out. Now, so now he's going to fight somewhere else. And that caused difficulties there. Well, Colin Powell was in the line of the Bushes, I think. He was a guy that at the time we thought was excellent for the times. I remember being very proud of him as an American. I remember being thrilled that a guy of his character was leading the State Department, that he had been a general in our military. I could not have been more impressed with him. But just like the Bushes, he and his friends revealed themselves to be very weak Republicans, very weak conservatives, very weak patriots when it came to Donald Trump. And they jumped all over him and attacked him, voted for the Democrats over him, knowing the damage that a Hillary Clinton would do. They would rather vote for a Hillary Clinton because Trump said some nasty things to a brother, to somebody else, who he made a remark that nobody liked. You would skewer your entire country and your future and the future of everyone's children because you didn't like this guy or the way he talked or because he insulted somebody in your family. What is that doing? And while Colin Powell was a hero, and he is a hero for his service in the military, his political change, I think, at the end weakened his legacy. I hope he finds his way into heaven with a loving God, and I hope his family's suffering is eased. You know, 84 years old, people are screaming, he was fully vaccinated and he still died. Well, you know, he was 84, right? So what's the median age life for American male? 74? He got 10 years more than most of us are going to get. And if it was the COVID, if it was part of the COVID, if it was part of just being 84 years old, he was taken from his family. And that's a very sad thing. So I would pray for his soul and his family. And I would remember him as a hero. And I would kind of let the political stuff go. So that's kind of what I wanted to say about Colin Powell. Good man. Good man who I think who just went off the rails a little bit politically for lots of different reasons. Now, let's look at, for a couple minutes here, Joe Biden and his ratings. Where is he at these days? Well, I said, right, people saying that he's not very trusted. We could see that he's very weak. We could imagine the rest of the world is laughing hysterical at us. The Chinese are shooting hypersonic missiles that travel the world with nuclear bombs on them like it's nothing. The people in the rest of the world see this weakness. Our enemies see it, and it's very, very scary. So his ratings, his polls are way, way down. So much so that, you know, if you made a cartoon series or a comic book out of President Biden's administration, it would have to be, he'd have to have like a secret identity, a dual identity. You know, well, Clark Kent was really Superman, and you know, Bruce Wayne was Batman. Well, they all have that. Well, Joe Biden is actually Joe Carter, you know, and Jimmy Carter is actually Jimmy Biden. They are dual personalities that could be interwoven with each other. When we look at the crises that are going on right now, the crisis at the border is completely out of control, so much so that they're finally, I'm reading articles that these immigration people who want completely open borders and let everybody come here are very upset because there's talk that the Biden administration might go back to the remain in Mexico policy, which is correct. We can't just let everybody pour into our country. If you have a legitimate reason to come, then we should open the doors. But we can't just let everybody come here. We just can't. Right? And I don't see the people that don't understand. Well, they want a better life. Well, so do I. But I can't go to your house and just take your things. I can't just walk in and say, okay, now you're going to start paying for my things because you got more than me. We can't do that. And we can't open our doors and let everybody who just wants better to come here. They should stay in their country and they should fight like our forefathers did for their own freedom, for their liberty, to take back their countries. That's what they should do. And we should help them if they want to fight for freedom. I would say we would help them. But we can't just have people pouring over the borders. So you have the border crisis. You have the economy crisis. We have container ships filled with goods that we need sitting off the coast of Los Angeles, and they can't come in for a host of reasons. And I don't pretend to know them all. But I know there's regulations on because of the COVID and who can take things off the dock and who has to be vaccinated or they can't come to work even if they're not sick. They can't come to work if they didn't get vaccinated. You have to be vaccinated to go to work, to get to unload the ships, to put them on things. Well, if we can't see that as a simple problem, and we have a Department of Transportation Secretary, Pete Buttigieg. Now, I got to tell you, I've heard a lot of things, some of them nice, some funny, some cruel, and some completely inappropriate things about Pete Buttigieg. He's married to another man. The hell do I care who he's married to and who he loves? The world is better off with more love than less love. That's what I always say. So he found somebody he's happy with, and they want to make a family. They're going to make a family. But he's on maternity leave for 2 months, and we have this horrifying situation going on in our country with transporting goods across the country. I was a police detective, right? And I had a child. We got 2 weeks off. But that was contingent on the fact that there wasn't something really bad that happened that I'd have to come in. Because you know what? I had 4 kids. 3 times I was a detective when my child was born. And 3 times there was something really bad. I had to come in off of maternity leave or paternity leave, whatever they call it for the father. I had to come in off of that to take care of something. And I did because that was my responsibility. Well, Secretary Buttigieg has a responsibility here. It's nice that you have a baby, and you're nice that you want to make your family really nice, but look at what's happening to our country. So get out there, Secretary. Go take care of this, all right? Well, I feel a little bit better right now. I'm venting a little bit. But congratulations on the baby, by the way. Right? Babies are beautiful. So I think it's wonderful that you got a baby. You want to love the baby. Everybody should love the baby. But you have a responsibility. Get back to work. Go over there, figure it out, get everything moving. Then go back and see the baby again. I'm sure you got a lot of help at your house. Right? You got to have a lot of people there that could help you. My family, different people could come and help with the baby. You don't need to be there every minute. All right. Will be back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen, with our second segment.
It was a vision that gave birth to a unique multimedia platform that would combine classic talk radio, great writers, and memorable podcasts and videos. AmericaOutloud.com is a conservative leader in a field that is predominantly run by far-left progressive globalists. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
All right. Welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe, and I'm trying to calm myself down. I get myself wound up when I think about these things in my country, and I try to find a way for us to work together, because that is really at the heart of it all. I believe everyone has a voice. Everyone's voice is important, whether I agree with you or not. We all have a point of view. We all have an opinion about things, and we need to hear everybody's opinion and then decide what is best. The problem we run into is when we're trying to decide what is best. That's where the conflict usually comes in. So, if you're having trouble sleeping, or you're not feeling as healthy as you should be, how do you make better choices? What could you possibly do for yourself? See where I'm going here, my friends? That's right. I'm talking about Healthy Cell and their Healthy Cell products. Now, the reason I'm telling you about Healthy Cell is because I've tried them myself. I'm taking them every day, and I do feel actually very, very good. I've told you that. I think that's an important thing. You got to feel good, and how can you do it? There's a billion different kind of supplements out there, and everybody's going to do this for you, do that for you. I tried this. I said, let me give it a try, and I've been taking it now for several months. I feel good. I feel strong. I normally get a lot of colds and sinus things. I haven't had a lot of them. I had a little bit here and there, but it went away quick, and I'm happy about it. What's really awesome, too, is that the Healthy Cell also makes a sleep product. Right? If you're having trouble sleeping, I didn't realize how many people have trouble sleeping. Apparently, lots and lots of people do. When I worked shift work, my hardest time to sleep was after the midnight shift, because you get home, the sun's up, you're sleeping, you're awake, the kids are around. I got that. You know, that was what it was. But after 3 to 11s or day shift, I slept like a baby. I've never had a problem sleeping. So I didn't really understand it. My cousin Steven, I think I started telling you the story about Steven. Steven's a nice young man. He's probably 42 years old, healthy as a horse, big fella, you know, strong, has a couple of kids and a wife, and he's working every single day, working very hard, good American young man, my cousin Steven. And he's out there working, and I see him posting on social media that, you know, it's like 3:30 a.m., and I'm still up, can't sleep, this sucks, I hate it. I wish I could find something to do. So I saw three or four of those posts, and I reached out to him. I said, Steven, what's the problem? You having trouble? He goes, dude, I'm telling you, I don't know what it is. I feel like an insomniac. I'm exhausted, but I can't go to sleep. And I said, well, maybe it's, she goes, I've tried everything. And I don't want to do sleeping pills. You don't want to get addicted to, you know what I got? I sent away for this healthy cell immune boost, and I also sent away for the sleep helper. Right? I said, I don't need the sleep helper. You want to try it? He said, yes. So I sent it over to him. I said, now I'll give you 2 weeks and see if you feel, but you really got to use it. You know, don't tell me you're going to use it. You know, oh, no, I'm going to. So 2 weeks goes by, and I see him make a post on social media. What reminded me is that he's something like, ah, never felt so refreshed. Finally got a night's sleep. So I called him. I said, Steven, what's up? He goes, Joey, I got to tell you, that stuff really did work. It took, I don't know, 3-4 days. But next thing you know, I was sleeping. And if I woke up, I got to go back to sleep. Right? Now, I don't want to spend all day talking about this, but I can tell you, he's not the only one. Another friend of mine down in Virginia saw our back and forth about this and says, Joe, how do I get this stuff? I gave him the address. They advertise on the station, right? Healthy Cell. So she sent away for it, and she's been on it. I don't know, I'm going to say just over, probably just about 10 days. I said, hey, Debbie, how's it going? She goes, I can't believe it really works. I actually fell asleep. And I've been getting sleep, and I haven't got sleep in a long time. So there you go. There's two real testimonials from people that really use the Healthy Cell. I like the immune boost, and now the people who need it for sleep, it seems to work. Give it a try. It's on the station here. You hear it advertised all the time. If you can't sleep or you want to do better with your vitamins, try Healthy Cell, okay? I want to make sure I got that in here because it's important that you know about this stuff, right? All right. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about that I mentioned in the first thing was this article, this Barry Weiss, and I hope I'm saying her name right, former New York Times reporter, and she was, who was she interviewed by? The Stelter guy, Brian Stelter. You know, he's a strange dude, right? He says a lot of weird things. I had an article of his the other day I really want to cut apart, and if I could find it before the end of today's show, I will, where he was talking about people are really upset by the way the media lies, and he was mad at Katie Couric. That's what it was. Katie Couric one time said she was talking to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and she edited Ginsburg's comments because she thought it made Ginsburg look bad, and she was a real fan of her opinion and her political opinion and her, and she edited it. And this Brian Stelter, shockingly enough, he came out and he goes, you know, that really makes journalism look bad. That makes all these people that don't have trust in the media, it gives them fodder, you know, for their conspiracy theories. And that's where it struck me. Wait a minute, dude. You just got done saying that this woman, Katie Couric, admitted she edited a story to make this politician person, the judge, look good because she thought her real comments made her look bad and she wanted to protect her and her point of view. That's not a conspiracy theory then, you dope. That's the real thing, and that is why people are annoyed. So he goes on and on through this article. And at the end of the article, he makes another bonehead statement. He goes, and then along comes Donald Trump with his lies every single day, and now people don't know whether to trust the media because of his lies. No, bonehead. Once again, Donald Trump pointed out your lies, not just you personally, but all of you in the media, which was backed up by the Katie Couric story, saying she did a lot of things to make sure the world went the way she went. Well, we can all see that you all do that. We can all see that you do all of that. You know, the Joe Biden comic book, Jimmy Biden or Joe Carter, you know, their dual personalities. Where are you on all the crises that are going on with the Biden administration? Where are you down on the border looking at what's really happening down there? Where are you at the Loudoun County School Board demanding to know if a young girl was sexually assaulted in a bathroom by a transgender youth? And that is why the father was there very upset. And that you moved that boy to another school where he assaulted another young girl. Where are you looking into that to see if there's conspiracy theories about this really hold any water? Do people have any reason to be afeared of these kind of things? Right? There you go, dope. Let me give you a little bit of advice. I don't got your million-dollar contracts, right? But I can tell you, your commentary that people are the conspiracy, it's not conspiracies when we can show that it's real. So there, let me put it that way. All right. So Barry Weiss, she goes on and she's making a comment about how the world has gone mad, right? And then she lists certain things. Now listen, if this doesn't encompass a lot of the things that we're all concerned about these days. And I hate to read from an article, but I think it's important that we hear this. All right, so former New York Times journalist Barry Weiss confronted CNN's Brian Stelter about his network's coverage of the COVID-19 lab leak theory when listing examples of why the world had gone mad during a Sunday edition of Reliable Sources. I guess that's his show. Weiss has written that many Americans feel the world has gone mad. So the left-wing CNN host asked her what she meant by that comment. What do you mean by that? What do you mean people think the world has gone mad? Here's her answer. This is great. Where can I start? Well, when you have the chief reporter on the beat of COVID for the New York Times talking about how questioning or pursuing the question of a lab leak is racist, the world has gone mad, right? Nobody was going after the Wuhan lab for leaking the virus because we hate the Chinese or we hate a different race of people. It's because the lab was in China, you see? It had nothing to do with that. And when you refuse to investigate it because it makes your side look bad, and then you call everyone racist who does want to do it, there's your conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy. We know you're actually doing things to cover up the news. So she continues. When you're not able to say out loud that there are differences between men and women, the world has gone mad. All right? It used to be a time when we said we'd have tolerance for people who saw the world a different way. And I do. I'm very tolerant. I hope you can hear that in all the things I talk about. I don't care who you love. I don't care where you go. I don't care what you do. That's your life. If it makes you happy, good for you. As long as it don't interfere with me, right? But to say that you can no longer say there's a difference between men and women, that if you do, you're a hater and you have to be destroyed. If we have to get to that point, the world has gone mad, and that's her point. When we're not allowed to acknowledge that rioting is rioting and that it's bad, and that silence is not violence, but violence is violence, right? Silence is not really violence. Violence is violence. Then the world has gone mad. When you're not able to say that the Hunter Biden laptop is a story worth pursuing, the world has gone mad. When in the name of progress, young school children, as young as kindergarten, are being separated in public schools because of their race, and that's called progress instead of segregation, the world has gone mad. There are dozens of examples, Weiss cites. Right? Unbelievable. So, of course, all of that kind of makes sense, right? This is where the Stelter guy saying, it's all conspiracy if you don't agree with him and his narrative. But when you point out these facts, it makes it very clear that this is a problem. So he says, well, who are the people stopping the conversation? He asks her. And she responded, she goes, well, the people who at the networks, frankly, like the one I'm speaking to right now, this network, that says it's racist to investigate the lab leak theory. Right? Isn't that what they said? Didn't we hear that? If you call it the Wuhan flu, then it's racist. Right? Really, that was just an attack on Trump. Now, I'm going to combine a couple things here now. See, we thread these all together. We try and connect the dots here from one end of my show to the other because I try and bring that together. When I said Joe Biden has all these problems in the country he's trying to deal with, and he's got low ratings, and he's got all these problems, and we hear really almost nothing investigatory about them, right? Nobody's actually looking at these things. But if you remember, if Donald Trump, as president, had a hangnail, they would investigate his improper use of fingernail clippers, his unhygienic way he lived his life compared to the way doctors say you should do it. They would say it's a lie, that it's not actually a hangnail, it was an improper clipping. This would go on for days and days and days. In the meantime, we have all of these real things happening to Joey Carter, Jimmy Biden, the dual personality. And none of these media outlets gives it any real time of day. They really don't look at the things that are going on. I'm reading stories now about how Joe Biden and his son had bank accounts where money went back and forth. You don't think that's worth looking at? But we should look at Donald Trump's taxes from 12 years ago. That's what we should look at. Not a real thing right in front of your face. That, Mr. Stelter, and everybody else out there in left-wing media world, that is why people don't trust you. That is why people come up with these conspiracy theories, because we don't have access to real information. We have your slanted information. That's all we get, and your point of view. And anyone who dares to say anything different is labeled as some kind of a hater or a racist or a killer or an insurgent or a terrorist or some other nonsense as a way of shutting people down so we can't have conversation. This is one of the realities that we have to deal with, and it's really unfortunate. Okay, so now I'm going to try and switch gears a little. Let's all take a deep breath together. Ready? One, two, three, in. Hold it. Let it out. Okay, that's called square breathing. All right, square breathing. You do that 3-4 times in a row. You start to slow your breathing down. You start to slow everything down. You can say, hey, what's going on? A couple of things I want to talk about. That's off the politics, kind of. You know, one of the things we're seeing in the world of law enforcement is that it's harder and harder to find police officers to hire, right? People are having a hard time. Departments are having a hard time coming up with officers to hire because the men and women that would normally want those jobs are looking at what's going on and they're saying, not a shot. I go to work. I can be ambushed and killed. My killer will be out of jail the next day. Matter of fact, then they will try and find a way to blame me for the killer killing me. Like, how dare I arrest them for doing something bad? My family will be belittled. They could protest at my home. And, oh, God forbid I survive the attack, I'll probably get sued. So one of the things that we're seeing in the court recently, the Supreme Court, they're taking on a lot of important cases. Well, one of them has to do with qualified immunity. So what is qualified immunity? Qualified immunity basically means that if a government employee, in the course of doing their duty, their job, whatever it is that their job is, in this case, law enforcement is a government agency, right? The local government, state government, county government, whatever, federal. Law enforcement agents are out there doing their job. And if something happens where somebody gets injured or killed or some other property damage or whatever, qualified immunity means as long as the officer was acting under color of law and under the color of their office, then you can't sue them personally. You can certainly sue the town for improper training of the officer. You can sue the town because the officer works for the town and, you know, they had to be responsible. But you couldn't personally go sue the officer. Now, the anti-police crowd that's out there, the defund the police are bad, the police are all racist, that whole crowd that's out there, they want you to think that, you know, qualified immunity allows cops to just, you know, kill whoever they want to kill, because the cops are killers, you know, they want to kill people. They can beat up whoever they want to beat up. They could steal if they want to steal. Cops can do whatever they want to do because they got this qualified immunity. Well, that's not really how it works. And of course, hey, Brian Stelter, you want to do an article on, you want to do something on your show on that? No, you don't want to? No. Okay, right. That's why we think you're full of conspiracies and nonsense. So qualified immunity, when an officer is trying to do the right thing and it goes bad, because it does sometimes, because you know what? Let me give you a couple of truths here. First of all, not everyone wants to get arrested or be held accountable for what they did. Can you believe that? Can you believe that? There are people out there that will rape somebody, maybe even kill them, and then when the police come to arrest them, they don't want to be arrested. They don't want to be held accountable. Oh, it's true. I know. Some of you are shaking your head saying, there's no way. Oh, yeah. There are people who will fight. They will shoot at the police. They will try and kill the officer, preventing them from making the arrest. And what is the officer to do? Well, in the minds of people who are anti-police, you should basically step away and let them leave. Don't arrest them. Don't employ force. Don't employ force because, you know, you might hurt the person and, you know, they don't deserve to be hurt just because they're not convicted of a crime. They're wanted for a crime. It doesn't mean they did it. And if they resist and you fight back and they get hurt, well, that's just not right. Now, I know I'm making a little fun of this situation, but that's the ridiculousness of this. Let's remember a couple of things. Number one, the police, the men and women of law enforcement in our nation, are not a rogue group of people who just decided to put on a uniform, get a gun, get a cool-looking car, ride around, and harass the hell out of everybody else. That's not how it works. What happens is we, the people, the citizens of the United States, have decided we want to live in a land that is safe and secure. and we are free from robbery, rape, murder. We don't want those things to happen to us. We want to run a store and not have somebody come in and stick a gun in our face and kill our wives who's simply working there trying to make a couple of dollars to feed the family. We don't want somebody to rape our daughters or our sons. We don't want that to happen. So how do we do that? Well, we have a legislature and we go to our representatives and say there has to be a way to prevent this. Hey, how about we create laws? Let's make a bunch of laws and say what people can and can't do when it comes to hurting other people. And anyone who violates those laws will be held accountable. Which means if somebody decides, I want to rape today, and they do, and they get caught, they will have to be accountable for their actions. I am going to murder someone to get the insurance money. Okay, you do that and you get caught, you're going to be held accountable and you're going to have to pay a penalty for that. Those are laws and that's why we have them in place. Now, having these laws is great. We have all these laws and we all feel better because now it's against the law to murder, to rape, to rob, to steal, to go into your house and take all your stuff. It's against the law to do that. So we feel much safer, don't we? But if there's no enforcement of that law, it's really just words on a paper, isn't it? I mean, think about it now. It's just words on a paper. In the world of domestic violence, and it's Domestic Violence Month in October, what's the purpose of a restraining order? Restraining order tells one person that they should stay away from another person who they have threatened or caused harm to. And the judge issues it with very strong words. You are commanded to stay away from Muriel Jones. Do not go near her for any reason whatsoever. If you do, you'll be in contempt of this court and you'll have to face a penalty. And you get that piece of paper and the victim hands it, or the court hands it to the accused. Here you go, you can't go near her. What stops him from going and choking her to death and killing her in her house? A piece of paper? Right. That's all. That's all it is, a piece of paper, and it means nothing. It's just like a law without any enforcement. Here it comes. Ring the bell. Bing, 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 bing. So how do we enforce our laws? Well, we can't have citizens just running around enforcing it on each other. Let's have a qualified group of men and women to go out and enforce the law. We'll call them police. What a good idea. We'll call them the police, and they will go out and enforce the laws. They will enforce the restraining order. When you call up and say, he's out front, I see him, and the cop shows up and there's a restraining order, off you go to jail because you violated, you made that person feel afraid, you put them in concern, you threatened them again. Boom, consequences for your actions. That's the purpose of the police. They're not rogue individuals who just go out and harass everyone. They're out there to serve the public and enforce the laws that we, the people, demand are in place. Now, one of those laws is you are not allowed to resist the lawful order of a police officer, period. So if an officer says, step out of the car, that's a lawful order. The officer has a right to get you out of that car for their safety so they can speak to you outside the vehicle. Doesn't matter whether you want to get out of the car or not. If you decided to drive a car, you put yourself in the position of following the laws of driving a car. One of them is you listen to the orders of a police officer. It's a lawful order. Get out of the car. What do you do? You get out of the car. What don't you do? Let's write this down, everyone. What don't you do when an officer tells you, step out of the car, please? Number one, you don't argue with the officer. Why do I have to get out? Why do I want to get out? I don't want to get out. I don't feel like getting out. What do I do? That's wrong. You're not allowed to do that. Your responsibility as a citizen is to step out of the car because you've been given a lawful order. The officer says, let me see your license, registration, and your proof of insurance, please. All things that we, the people, demand a driver have. The officer has a right to see it, to make sure you're not suspended. You're a dangerous driver, that you could kill people. Let me see your license, registration. Make sure your car is insured in case you run over something, including me or my children. You have insurance to pay the medical bills. What can't you do when the officer says that? I ain't giving you nothing. I don't have to give you anything. Wrong. You have to give everything the officer asked for. Now the officer says, you know what? Oh my gosh, there's a gun on the front seat. You're not allowed to have a gun. You've been arrested and convicted in the past of having committed crimes. Therefore, you're a person not permitted to have a firearm, and you have one. You are under arrest, sir. What are you not permitted to do at this point? Here you go. Argue your case. You can't argue your case. The officer's not there to listen to your case, your nonsense. You cannot resist the officer's arrest. When the officer says, turn around, put your hands behind your back, you're under arrest. You have one option. That is to turn around, put your hands behind your back, and submit to the arrest. Whether you think you're righteous or not, then the officer handcuffs you, takes you to the police car, puts you in a car, takes you to headquarters for processing. Now, when you get to court, you get to have a lawyer. You get to see all the reports, the documents, the video, the body cam, the car cam, the telephone cam, everything. You get to see everything. And you get to make your case in court to the judge that you should not have been arrested. You didn't agree with what the officer did. That's where you get to do that. You get to have all the say in the world at that point. Out on the street, you are to do what the officer tells you. And if people did that, 99.9% of all violence when it comes to arrests would disappear. Because the police do not just really yank people out of a car, beat the hell out of them to arrest them. They get them out of a car, they handcuff them and put them in a police car. It's the people who fight, who argue, who give a hard time, who want to make their case, who kick, stomp, try to run, pull weapons, do all kinds of things that are the impetus for the violence. Now, I know people don't like to hear that. A lot of people would rather believe that it's the cop who does the violence. Well, in 99.9% of the incidents, it's not. In that 0.1%, when it is the cop who did it improperly, we hold the cop accountable, right? Qualified immunity means if the cop's doing their job and something bad happens, you have to give them the benefit of the doubt. I've had to make a lot of decisions in a split second out on the road. That could mean life or death for me or another person. And all of those decisions were made and based on the actions of someone I was trying to take into custody or to stop from committing the crime they were committing. That's the reality and truth of it. So listen, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to pontificate all day long. I know that the Supreme Court has recently said in two cases, two unsigned opinions, that qualified immunity belongs to the police. You can't get rid of it. Now, hopefully that's a bigger case that'll come out and they will settle that once and for all, because a lot of places are trying to get rid of it. Because if you could sue the cop, then the cop won't do their job and then the people won't get hurt. No, society will be run rampant with crime as we're seeing today. So that's really the reality of what they're talking about when they say qualified immunity. If the cop's doing their job and things go wrong, we have to give them the benefit of the doubt. Unless they did something purposely illegal or malicious, then they're held to account. Right? And the Supreme Court recently overturned, just by not signing the opinion, but sending it back saying, no, qualified immunity is real. And in these particular cases, we're going to keep them. I was going to tell you a story about a time I had a fight for my life one time when I was a brand new cop. But we're going to save that for another episode here on Chasing Justice. So we learned a lot today. We spent a lot of time together. I appreciate you letting me get off some steam and think about this. But remember, we're all one people. We are all God's people. We are all Americans. We all need to go in the same direction, even if we want to get places a different way. All right, my friends. Remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. This is Lieutenant Joe signing off for Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.